You're listening to Ian Stone's Comedy Breakfast, the podcast edition. I'm here on Love Sport Radio every weekday morning at 6:30. This morning I was joined by the former Watford and Brentford goalkeeper, Richard Lee.
I used to go to the old county championship game. I went to quite a lot of cricket when I was a
did
kid.
You?
Yeah, well, I had my
did you
dad.
Play?
Did I play? I played, I did play a few games. Yeah, I wasn't very good. I did hit the most glorious cover drive once before. Just spanked it away. And the bowler, he comes in and I just knocked it to the boundary. One of those shots where no one moves.
Yeah.
Except for the bloke who's going to get the ball, you know, and it was just perfect. And the bowler looked at me and goes, good shot. And he bowled me. He got me out the next ball because he bowled a slower ball. And all those things that you learn when you play the game, when you play a bit of football and you know, that was always my game. So you know when people are trying different things. But I wasn't ready for that. I just thought, I'd smack another one. That felt like fun.
It feels so good when you hit it, when it comes out the middle of the bat and it does go to the boundary. It's the best thing. I didn't tell you, actually, little story. One of my worst moments came from a match of cricket when I was asked against my wishes to play in a game where I was a little bit too old for the game that I was asked to play in, and I got caught out and it was quite embarrassing. I had the whole team realise that I was too old for the game and I never played again.
Too old for the game?
Basically, there was a coach that it was like an under-11s game and I was 12.
And you were 42. You went for 27, I went for 42. I think 27 actually was funnier. I do. Anyway,
bear in mind, I'm not 42 yet.
I know that. That's also part of the reason. Yeah. Nice one, yeah.
Anyway, Jamie's in the room.
Jamie's here. Hello, Jamie.
Hello. Anyway, so Rich, you were playing with these kids.
Yeah, and then it turned out that we were playing and I was doing really well, which I would, because they were... By the way, I'm ignoring your comment.
No, there's no need.
No, I wasn't.
I don't think he was. I think he was just asking the question.
So then I was playing and I was obviously playing very well. I was scoring, I was on quite a high number, and it just so happened that one of my friends from that particular village walked around the corner.
Pulled up in his car. So you're coming down the pub, Rich? So I'm just going to get 150 against these children and I'll be there. Yeah, a pint of lager. Yeah, tough. That's how it should be. Sorry, that wasn't the story.
It kind of is. No, he realised that I was too old. He told a few people and suddenly word spread. And I'm stood in the crease and I felt so embarrassed because I didn't want to play in this game anyway.
Did you give
and then
up
all
your
of
wicket?
A sudden, I did and I never played again. That's like my sad end
of
my cricket career.
You played with your own age. You know what? It doesn't mean you can't play again. It's just not with children. God's sake. Oh, what a sad end.
Why did your mate tell? That's a bit out of order. Snitch,
a little bit,
you?
Because it was his village. The thing is, I was playing against his village. So it was more, and he thought it was quite funny. And obviously, I didn't at the time. I was devastated.
You must
and
have been taller than most of the children.
Well, no, because I'm really, like, it's only a year or so. And
how old were you?
12, and they were 11.
Well, it's not that much of a difference.
No, that's what I mean. So it was still a good score. I was still playing very well, but yeah, I was a little bit too old.
What did you score?
I was in like the 40s at the time.
Oh, right.
So
right.
Like we were cruising.
Thumping the ball all over the place.
It was easy, yeah. These little kids with their silly little bowls. I was hitting them for six. It was great.
Oh, hilarious. Jamie is in the room. Hello, Jamie.
Hello, good morning.
Okay, we've got some actual back page news as opposed to village back page news.
Yeah. Yes.
Storm in village cricket as Lee asserts scandal. That's right. They've never got over it.
Adult smashes kids.
For six. Yeah, that's what it should be. Anyway.
It's a sad story actually on a lot of the back pages. One of the saddest things to come out of the racist abuse stuff we've heard in football recently. Danny Rose saying that he can't wait to quit the game because of the racist abuse in football at the moment. He says he's 28 now. He says he's just happy to do the last 5 or 6 years of his career, wants to enjoy those, but actually can't wait to retire, which is, like you say, incredibly sad for someone on 60 grand a week playing football for their country, something that probably as a boy, that's all he wanted to do.
Dreamed of. It's not about the money. It's not about the money. Listen, he's got more money than he knows what to do with. And as he said, they can't believe that they fine these countries less than he would spend on a night out. And I thought, blimey, he really does spend money on a night out. That is a good night out. I don't know what he's doing, but very, very nice. But it is sad. It's the fact that it's the dreams. It's the hopes and dreams of a young kid crashes up against this ignorance and prejudice. I think it's grim. I do.
Yeah, no, it is. I mean, actually, what you said, he says, seeing how things are done in the game at the minute, it's just whatever, isn't it? Just want to get out of it. It says there's so much politics in the game. And actually, Lyle Taylor, Charlton forward was on the fan show yesterday, and said some interesting things about what he'd do, that he should walk off the pitch. Talking about the FA, we could probably hear some of that now. Actually,
I pull no punches and I make no bones about it. I will be walking off the pitch. End of discussion. If the FA or whoever it is feel that they need to punish me for that, then so be it. But I will be walking off the pitch.
Well, there's a lot more talk about that now, isn't there? This walking off the pitch if this racist abuse gets too bad. It happens in Italy. It's happened in Italy a few times.
Yeah, do you know what I'd say? And this is, you know, obviously this... The big point being that the sanctions need to be more than they are. We all agree with that. The fines are a joke. It doesn't stop anything. The interesting thing is as well, though, and I know Danny Rose is saying, like, once he's done with football, almost like he's done, and he can't wait to get out of it, you'd be amazed at the amount of players that dislike football. And that's, and obviously he's got a legitimate reason, but you'd be amazed at the amount that get to a point, and because of all the highs, the lows, the criticism, the injuries, the depression in his case, and everything else that comes with it, I would guess 70 or 80% that are playing football currently don't actually particularly enjoy it, and it just becomes a job that you're good at, but you then almost have to categorise it as that, because if you get emotionally involved with what you're doing, then the amount of stick that you get, you soon fall out of love with the game anyway.
You can't take it personally.
No, so I think with this, it's interesting that it's, you know, he has got a legitimate reason as to why he feels that way, but he's not the only one. Everyone's got a lot of different reasons as to why they fall out of love with the game to an extent. But look, the main point he's making here is absolutely spot on. The sanctions aren't anywhere near what they need to be, and it is a societal problem. And it's good that we're talking about it. It's good that it's getting out there as much as it is, but something does need to change.
Yeah, well, maybe the walking off, maybe radical action will be the thing that makes people wake up. Maybe also, as you say, the fines. I mean, they fine Croatia. We talked about this. They fine Croatia 70,000-80,000 euros, which was 20,000 euros. This is for abusing Mario Balotelli in 2012 of the Euros. It's 20,000 euros less than Nicholas Bentner got fined for revealing the wrong betting company on his pants. And it didn't make any difference because 4 years later, Croatia are mowing a swastika into the pitch. So, you know, the fines aren't enough. You've got to start throwing countries, on a country terms, you've got to start throwing them out of competitions. And major countries as well, by the way. Because it's not enough. If Montenegro get thrown out, well, they're going to leave the competition sooner or later anyway. But let's say that Spain, I've seen Spanish fans give racist abuse to players. Why don't we chuck Spain out of a competition one time, or Italy? See how that goes down.
Or dock them points. I mean, or you can go straight to throwing them out. But at the moment, a fine just isn't enough to stop fans doing it, because that doesn't hurt fans, doesn't affect their money that fans are on.
We've been saying that for about 10 years. These fines are pitiable. Nothing's changed.
Make sure they can't get into the playoffs or even progress. If Spain don't make it through to the World Cup because of that.
Is it not then a point you said about it doesn't affect the fans? Like, actually, nobody sees any real... You know, even the guy that ran on the pitch and thumped, what's his name, at Villa, Grealish over the head.
14 weeks.
Point, it was just like, okay, he'll go in there for 6 or 7. He'll come out a bit of a hero in his local pub and it'll all be forgotten.
But unfortunately, like, there are sentencing guidelines when it comes to things like that for criminal behaviour, and you can't really change that. You can't, as much as you think, stick him in jail for 5 years and that will act as a deterrent. Well, it would, but you actually can't do that legally. But in terms of this sort of stuff, when the administration of the game can fine countries in enormous amounts of money, and more than that, as Jamie says, deduct points or throw them out of competitions.
I think it comes back to that. I know you're saying, okay, legal proceedings are what they are, but legal proceedings can be changed. It can be a case of, if you are caught giving racist abuse, then it equals a year, it equals 2 years in prison, and then all of a sudden you watch how many people then start to do that. That would be a...
But then that's British laws. I mean, you couldn't...
That's coming to the core, right? That's coming to the core of the problem and finding a way in which it's... At the moment, you know, you could go to a game, you could shout all sorts of racist abuse, you get a slap on the wrist, you go home and you come back the next game. Or you don't. Or you have a different identity and come back the next game because you get banned for a game.
Yeah, that's one thing, but that's English law. I mean, Mario Balotelli says that in England he didn't see any of it, and in Italy it's rife. You can't change Montenegrin laws to make sure Montenegrin fans are put in jail.
We can only start with England, right? Because this is the point. It's not like he's saying, oh, it was only in Montenegro that one time it's happened in my life. He's saying it's happened over and over, and a lot of the time it is in England.
I imagine Danny Rose is talking particularly about the Montenegro game and particularly what happened in the Euros rather than stuff that happens in the Premier League week on week. I mean, obviously, we know it does go on, and we saw Raheem Sterling getting abused from those Chelsea guys. Although even that is not totally clear whether they were racist to him or just angry middle-aged men. And let's be fair, there's a fair few of them about.
There's one in the room.
Well, you're 42, aren't you, as I was saying. But This, I think, is more related to what happened in Montenegro. And you're right, we can't change Montenegro laws. What we can do is chuck them out of competitions for this sort of stuff. And the fact that at first they denied that anything really happened. And then when I imagine one was the Montenegro tourist board went, you've got to get out there. And he stood there, this idiot, and he went, oh, I feel very bad. And honestly, everyone is welcome to come to Montenegro. And you could see the tourist board are all over that. Going, you've got to say something, otherwise people are going to cancel their holidays. Yeah. But I still don't feel it's enough. They've got to be punished by being thrown out of a competition. Surely. I'm not sure that's going to help Danny Rose. And I just like to say, I'm just really sad about this because of what all those dreams and hopes that he had as a kid. And this is what he's come to at 28. And I absolutely accept the point. There are plenty of footballers out there, and I've met quite a few who are not happy playing football. It's a job. It's a very well-paid job. They're very good at it. But there's tremendous amounts of pressure because it's on the back pages every day.
Every day.
Love sports.
Justice for a Reading fan who's got an Instagram handle called @SussexRoyal.
Now, I know what happened here.
Yeah, this is out of order.
Yeah,
it's out of order. That Meghan, basically, or the Royals have taken that.
Taken it?
Yeah.
You can't. Can you just take an Instagram handle?
Well, you shouldn't be able to, but you have. But they have. I guess if you're a royal, then you can. He's a driving instructor, 55-year-old, Sussex, Reading fan. He had 47 followers in 3 years. He's doing all right. He doesn't need a lot of followers. He's happy with his life, I'm sure. And
Know that. I've got a mate who's a driving instructor. He's miserable all the time. It's his default city.
And Reading are down the bottom of
the
table.
Oh, there's that as well, yeah. Well, my mate's support Reading, so it's different. But anyway, go on.
He's all right. But anyway, all of a sudden on Tuesday, goes to log on Instagram and his Instagram handle's changed.
Oh, no.
And sure enough, it's gone to Harry and Meghan.
Oh. Outrageous.
It is outrageous. And he said they should have asked.
Well, of course they should have asked. They can't do that.
I know. Should we start?
What are those 47 people going to do now?
Where are they going to get their driving instructing and Reading news, their general photos?
Mm.
You know? I mean, I'm Elizabeth II on Instagram, so I'm a bit concerned now. is that an issue? I mean, who else would want that?
I think if she was going to take it, she'd have done that by
now. I imagine she would have done. Yeah.
Unless she's just getting into Instagram age 92. But
that's true.
Yeah, at least I suppose if one of his 47 followers was followed by him, then at least now Harry and Meghan follows them. I guess that could be a claim to fame.
But I don't understand. So he hasn't got Sussex Royal anymore?
No, it doesn't say what they've changed his to. But Sussex Royal is now Harry and Meghan.
Right. The reason that this happened was partly because Wills and Harry used to do Instagram together, didn't they? And then they decided to go their separate ways. Because if the rumours are correct, their wives have fallen out, or, you know, Kate is just, no, I don't want him involved anymore. And there's all sorts of stuff going on.
Oh, really?
Oh, no, I was reading about it the other day in Norfolk, right? And the country set. Oh, I don't want to have anything to do with these people or that people. Yeah, she's a bit, apparently. Okay. It might all be nonsense, right? They don't, listen, I don't hear any of that
stuff. You don't
know
them personally?
I don't know them personally. Okay. They don't want anything to do with me. I'm like staff as far as they're concerned, right?
No, they don't.
I'm like their pet Jew. Should we keep the Jew? Should we keep the Jew, Wills? I don't know. Is he funny? He is. Let's keep the Jew for the moment. I'm sure they're not like that. Anyway.
They don't see eye to eye. No, you're right. But I think they're having a baby and they just got married and all that. So
This is Meghan and Harry.
Not Harry and Wills. Yeah, so I think the time has come, you know, to get an Instagram with your wife rather than your brother.
I think an Instagram with your wife's a bit weird. Don't you? When they have separate Instagrams.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they have their own personal ones, but you're asking too many questions now. But anyway, the fact is, Kevin Kelly has lost Sussex Royal, which is a shame. So we'll start a campaign here at Love Sport to get Kevin his Instagram handle back.
I'm sure those 47 will join us.
Yeah, I'm sure they will. Yeah, you know. What, the 47 listeners?
Isn't there one? Isn't there past pupils? Do you think who they are? And they followed. We loved our driving instructor Kevin. He was all right, wasn't he?
Yeah.
You know, helped me pass. And that maybe you could give driving lessons to Prince Philip as some sort of, you know, they get him back in there. The Queen's given up driving on the road as well now, hasn't she?
Yeah.
She is. Oh, she's really? Only got the 47,000 acres of the Sandringham estate to drive around, poodle about on.
Do you like cats or dogs or a bit of both?
Dogs.
I've got both. Got one of each.
Got both.
Yeah.
Well, a study of 78 pets in Japan found that cats associate their names with the sound of food, play or petting. So you might have thought, oh, only dogs can understand if you shout their name. Apparently cats do too.
Really?
Yeah.
Right.
We used to try this out with my cat. And,
should we try it out on your cat?
No, we did. He's dead now, so you have trouble.
We'll starve to death.
Don't joke about it. No, his name was Punch.
Never came for food. I don't understand it. What was his name?
Punch.
Punch.
Yeah,
nice. He kept going, Punch. Yeah, Punch. And then nothing.
No, he'd look up, and then you'd go, Sebastian, and he'd look up again.
Right, it was just the tone.
Yeah, it was the tone.
It wasn't the brightest cat.
Yeah, but dogs are really thick, though, aren't they? Don't know. Have you
Come
got a dog?
On. Parents have got dogs.
Yeah, they are thick, though, aren't they? Not your parents, the dog.
Parents as well.
Oh, dear. Sorry.
Who'd have thought?
You too. What is it with you two?
They're not the brightest, but they're not thick. I wouldn't say dogs are thick.
Really? I told you this. Whenever I go, I take the rubbish out, and then I come back in, and the dog is so excited. You're back! I thought you'd abandoned me. I'm just taking the rubbish out, mate. You're an idiot.
Yeah, but they don't know that. You could be gone and never coming back. I mean, look, so how nice is it that you
they're
can go
needy,
for 1 minute?
They're needy, then. That's what they are.
Yeah, you could be, but the fact that they think you might be gone and never come back shows they're thick, because they've lived with you for years.
You don't speak the same language, Jamie. So it's hard to say to them, look, Max, that's my mum and dad's dog. Max, I'm going, I'll be gone for 1 minute, and I'll be right back. They don't know what that means. So they just see you walking out the door, you're gone.
Yeah,
you might never come back.
Excuse me, if they see you walking out the door with a rubbish bag, right? He's left me forever, and all he took with him was a bin bag full of rubbish. Oh, he's back. Oh, thank God for that. My God, I thought you'd left me.
Cats couldn't care less.
No, cats couldn't care less.
That's
cats
go.
Cats, yeah, you go. You know what? I'll get my food elsewhere. I'll go next door. Yeah. They'll adopt me. I get fed there already.
And cats don't actually meow to other cats. That's all something they do just for humans to give
cats
them food.
Cats don't meow to other cats?
No.
Oh, my God. How do they communicate then?
Don't they?
Exactly
they do a bit of that to other cats. But
scowly.
They've invented the meow to get stuff from humans they want.
Invented the meow. Well, listen, one cat came around and said, "Yeah, listen to this. Meow." Oh, my God, that's brilliant. We can get anything from humans. They're idiots, aren't they, humans?
So manipulative. That's why I don't like cats. Mm. You know,
really?
Dogs, what you see is what you get.
You know what? You're absolutely right. That is true. Having one of each, it's true. Mm. But I quite like, once in a while, the cat, it grants me a few minutes of its time. Do you know?
Is that how you see it, though?
Yeah, no, it does feel like that, but I'm okay with that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. When I used to quite like marijuana, right, back in the day. And when I was stoned, I used to have quite nice conversations with a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was quite, I'd get in. I know what you're doing. Don't turn your back on me and show me your ass. I know about all that. And we'd have very nice chats. And
do you not have good chats for the dog?
No, the dog is just...
The dog's just like, Ian,
It's that. And looking at its lead and looking at food. You know what the dog does? It just comes over and watches me eat.
Oh,
cheese. My dog loves cheese. As soon as I'm in the kitchen with cheese, the dog's in there. Just looking at me, making ridiculous noises.
Do you ever give it any cheese?
Yeah, I always give it cheese. That's probably why, to be honest with you. He is massively fat now, the dog. Likes a bit of brie. He'll have to make do with cheddar, though, in a few weeks' time after Brexit.
This is Love Sport.
Jamie.
Yeah, the big story on the back page of the Times today, the headline is plans to keep smaller clubs out of Europe. We've heard quite a lot about potential changes to the Champions League, whether they're going to have a European Super League. The story today is that they're thinking of, rather than having their eight groups of four in the Champions League, having four groups of eight. Which would mean 14 games per team. And on top of that, they're thinking of almost making it a closed shop. So you'd only have two who went down from each group. So there'd be only eight places up for grabs. The rest of the teams, you wouldn't have the top four getting Champions League football like you currently do at the moment. You'd have only two teams coming down, so eight places for Europe up for grabs. So only maybe one team from England. The rest of them would automatically stay in that European competition.
Guarantees, you've got the big clubs in the competition. Near enough guarantees, you've got them in, year out.
Exactly.
Which is their worry, right?
They boring. Don't... Boring, isn't it boring?
Yeah, you talking about Jamie or the...
No, I did lose a little bit with all the numbers coming out. There's eight teams with four groups and the two, and then only one comes through and two go. And I'm thinking, I don't know what's happening here. But anyway, the point is,
you can just imagine them sat around a table. So at the moment, we've got eight teams of four. I've got an idea. Let's flip it.
Well, the idea is, so that means you get more. You get more games. That means more European games. So it's not for us, really. We're all right. It's for the likes of PSG, Juventus, Juventus won it, what, 8 times in a row, their league. PSG won Ligue 1 6 times out of 7
gonna,
in the last...
It's not going to help. It's not going to help in Europe, generally. It's not going to help in Italy, Italian football and French football. It's just going to make them stronger and everyone else weaker.
Yeah, no,
people
it is.
Will turn off those leagues.
Yeah, but that's the point. But these top clubs are thinking, we don't really care about our league anymore, both financially and in terms of competition. It's not worth them playing Sampdoria, Juventus. They'd rather get the money for playing Real Madrid again. Even if there were 14 Champions League, well, it won't be Champions League, whatever it's called, 14 group games, that still get more viewers than they're getting against their rubbish teams in their league.
This comes back to, and the thing is, we don't have the problem in the Premier League because we've got 6 strong teams.
And another four or five who are really good as well. Course, Wolves, by the way, are great to watch this year, and so are Watford.
Yeah.
And they're 7th and 8th.
Yeah, so that's the problem. We don't have the issue in the Premier League. It's the majority of the other major leagues have one outstanding team that are sucking up all the talent. So it's just become a procession every year. Juventus, yeah. PSG, even Scotland, obviously with Celtic. Even in Spain, there's nowhere near 6 teams. You're talking 2, maybe 3 at a push.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why UEFA are worried. They're worried that these top teams will leave the Champions League and form their own European Super League. So at the moment, they're thinking of these ideas because they're trying to make sure that they're keep them happy, so they don't completely leave UEFA altogether.
Well, we're all right in England. Why can't we just leave Europe alone and stay on our own?
This is
you should have voted, Richard, a few years ago.
This is the inevitable consequence of oligarch owners and huge amounts of money, and they want more of it. Mm. And no doubt they'll probably get it, but I just think it kills the domestic leagues. And let's be fair, we are having one of the best domestic seasons we've had in a long time. It's really, really good. It's competitive. You know, Cardiff, who are in the bottom 3, gave Chelsea an enormous game at the weekend and probably should have won, but for some appalling... refereeing and assistant decisions. So, yeah, you know, it's a very competitive league we got, but this is unusual in Europe, as you said. Most European leagues are not like that. Mm. It's a terrible shame, though, isn't it?
Bit of an argument about who first said that these games would happen on a Saturday afternoon. Alexander Seferin, who's the president of UEFA, said, no, we didn't say that. That came from the Spanish league's president. And he says, at the moment, no plans to have these European games on Saturday afternoons. But if this did come into effect, and this is seriously being talked about here because the big European clubs aren't happy at the moment, it would come into effect in 2024.
They're going to kill it. You know, they're going to kill it all. The golden goose. People will still watch it. But the truth is, you know what? Right now, we're having a great domestic season. Yeah, yeah. And if the top 3, 4, 5 teams are too rich to compete with everyone else, it won't be so good. Mm. And what happens then? People will go and watch lower football down the divisions, and that's fine. That's great and everything. But I just think this is just money grabbing, isn't it? What's going on at the moment. And it's already happening anyway. You see the strength of the top teams. It's very, very difficult for everyone else to compete. Wolves are doing really well, but they've got loads of money behind them. It's Chinese money, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And that, in the end, if you don't have some sugar daddy or some oligarch who's prepared to put in £1 billion of their own money into the club, what chance have you got? Mm.
No, I fully agree. You imagine that did happen, all these other leagues. Imagine that we took the top 6 out, for argument's sake, and now you've got the Premier League, whether it'd still be called that, I'm not sure, but you've got the Premier League now without those teams, because that's where it feels like it's going at some point. I know this isn't the suggestion here, but at some point... Because what would happen, by the way, with this suggestion is that effectively you'd have this other league going on. It would end up being B teams from Chelsea, Man United, Arsenal anyway. So it would be... I mean, it would make it a lot more... competitive, but the quality just wouldn't be there. It wouldn't be the excitement.
Teams, the B teams were playing what?
If it was a case of these teams completely moving out of the league and going into the European League, then you'd have, well, for a start, Watford suddenly be the favourites for the English top flight, you know, and Wolves would, and Everton would. But it would, again, it would just... I don't know, because the quality wouldn't be there. That's part of the excitement, is you get to play clubs? Against the Man City, the Man United.
It would be bad news for the Premier League. And also then, if they, say Leicester or whatever, won the Premier League, they potentially wouldn't even go up to this European League.
No.
And then where's the incentive at that point?
The money would fall out of this as well, because then...
People would not want to watch it. You know who watches? Man United get watched more than anyone else, right? And they're not there because they're playing the European Super League. Well, the money suddenly falls away. You know what? This has been coming, all this stuff. And I listen, the Champions League right now is brilliant. You get to the quarterfinal stage. Well, I can't wait for Man City, Spurs and Liverpool, Porto and the rest of it, and Barcelona, Man United. Brilliant. Mm. But this is the quarterfinals. Most of the time in the group stage, it's boring.
Yeah.
And the Europa League, look how uncompetitive that is. Chelsea won their last game, what was it, 8-0 on aggregate? Mm. That's not good enough, is it? I know, it's horrible the way this is going. Nothing we can do. It's way above our pay grade, isn't it? Really? It is so, isn't it? Let's be fair.
This is Love Sport.
Great Escape is on for AFC Wimbledon. They currently sit 22nd in League One, level on points with both Walsall and Southend. They're the form team of the division with 13 points in their last six games. We're joined now by the former Dons midfielder, Stuart Castledine. Good morning, Stuart.
How are we doing? You all good?
Good, thank you very much. Joint bottom of the league, 7 points adrift when Wally Downs was appointed. Now a genuine chance to stay in League One. Accrington, their next game. It's close to a miracle, isn't it?
Oh, it's unbelievable stuff. What would you expect from the mighty Dons? You know, we've made our way from oblivion all the way up to League One, and we weren't going to relinquish that without a fight. So no, it's been magical. It's been fabulous performances all round, and Wally's really turned things round.
And what happened with the mighty Dons in the period before Wally turned round? By the way,
well, let's not talk about that. It was, you know what? I mean, I try and get to most of the games, and we actually weren't playing too badly. We just genuinely weren't getting the rub of the green. Sometimes, we were playing some decent football. It was such a shame. Neil Ardley's a close friend of mine, and an ex-colleague, and he's hopefully he'll keep Notts County up on a separate note. But he was doing good work, and we've got decent players there, and Wally's just sort of picked up, who knows? You often get that, don't you? A new manager comes in, and perhaps a different way of thinking. But they've the lads have been magnificent, and we're all so pleased. But we're not out of it yet, so we've got to push on and get a result tomorrow against the Stanley.
Indeed, yeah. Well, looking at the fixtures, and obviously looking at the form table for a start, you're certainly the most in form in the bottom half of the table comfortably. And actually, five of the last six games, you've got there's Accrington, Stanley, Oxford, Bristol Rovers, Wickham, and Bradford. So it's all teams in the bottom half that are all in and around.
Right.
What do you think? Three wins of those six, and that'll do it?
Yeah, well, the way we're playing, you can fancy us to win all five of those. And I know we've got Luton snuck in there as well, which...
Yeah, I didn't mention that one.
Yeah, I know. But you look at it, and if it goes down to the wire in the last game of the season, okay, it is away, but we'll be away against Bradford. And with the greatest respect, they're pretty much adrift at the bottom of the table. So it's looking likely they'll be relegated anyway. So that's not a bad fixture to have on the last day of the season, against an already relegated team, potentially. So I'm very positive and upbeat about the chances.
And you were talking about Wally Downs and what an amazing job he's done. What has he done then? These are subtle things, but what goes on when... they always talk about a new manager bounce, and obviously it's partly that. But, obviously he knows the club, but you obviously could say the same thing about Neil Ardley as well.
Yeah, well, this is it. I know, yeah.
What's happened then?
Honestly, you can't put your finger on it. Glenn Hodges is there as well with Wally, and he's a pretty astute guy. I'm not at the training ground day to day, with the first team obviously. So I don't know what they're doing that's any different. I honestly think it's a case that I feel it was a false position we were in initially. As you saw, Neil Ardley oversaw the great win against West Ham in the FA Cup. He was part of that that whole kind of a process, and we've got a decent team, it's we spoke actually. Body oversaw that, but it was Neil's team initially. But Wimbledon should not have been bottom of the table for all the time they were, and so we're showing our true colours. Is all I can say.
Yeah. What is it with this division? You mentioned that five of those six games are all winnable, and there's a good chance that they will win them if they carry on their form. If they do that, there's a good chance they'll finish in the top half of the table. I've never known the League One to be as tight as it is.
It's crazy. But then again, it's almost like sort of a Premier League-esque, as in you've got like a real breakaway group at the top that are sort of far and away better than everybody else. And then the rest of the 18 or so teams are just all beating each other. So it has been a pretty crazy season. It really has. I think to be honest, mid-table is where we should be with the players we've got. We've got a decent squad. Mm.
Standout players, by the way, anyone in particular been really doing the business the last few weeks?
Hansen scored twice in the last game, and whenever I've seen him, that has been a real shame. I think maybe that was the reason that we weren't doing so well. He was injured for quite a bit of the early season, and he's a real sort of big, strong, committed player up front. He gets the goals, and he's coming into fitness just at the right time. So he's been playing very well recently, and you've got Will Nightingale. He's a young lad who I do know well. He's an academy product. I always keep my eye out on those. I came through the academy myself, and I've got my young lads in the academy. So And Will's been absolutely magnificent all season. He's taken over the captain's armband as well over the last few weeks, and he's been brilliant as well. So, but no, we've got a few decent players down there.
Yeah, don't forget the goalkeeper.
No, of course. Yeah.
He's brilliant, Ramsdale. I'm a big fan.
Yeah, no. You look through the team, so we've got some good lads there. It'd be such a travesty and such a shame because we've got the new stadium. We won't be in it next season, but the season after, and it would be horrible if we were in League Two for the opening game of that. We've got to stay in League One really, just for all the hard work that's been going on behind the scenes to get the stadium finished. We need to be in League One for that.
Quite, especially with MK Dons possibly coming the other way as well.
Well, that's going to be a big battle next season, isn't it?
Well, hopefully we'll be playing them. Nice to speak to you, Stuart. That's Stuart Castledine there, former Don's midfielder. Don't forget the goalkeeper. fair enough. Wimbledon play at Accrington Stanley. That's tomorrow at 3:00. Enormous game down the bottom of League One.
This is Love Sport.
There's a woman who has had her first ever pizza at the age of 94.
What?
Yes, because she was boycotting Italian food.
Why?
Over the treatment of her husband as a prisoner of war.
Yeah.
So he was released from a labour camp in 1945, and when he died 10 years ago at age 89, she tentatively had some spaghetti bolognese.
Did she like it?
She didn't mind it, yeah. And now 10 years later, she had a stroke, and she thought, right, that's it. I'll have an Aldi Hawaiian. And that's what she's at.
An Aldi Hawaiian. Yeah. I mean,
she's had an Aldi ham and pineapple.
I don't know what Aldi pizzas are like, right? They're probably not bad. Frozen? I'm guessing it might be frozen, that one. I don't know.
Not sure.
But it doesn't seem like a great start.
No. Obviously, I'm a pescatarian. I will eat meat again at some point in my life, but I've decided that as and when I do, it can't just be, no disrespect to Aldi, like an Aldi steak. As nice as I'm sure they are, it's going to need to be. If you're going to eat pizza for the first time, you're not going for a frozen Aldi pizza, surely.
Well, we don't know it was frozen, but listen, she's, what is she, 90 something?
She's 94.
Yeah. I mean, it's a shame in a way that she's missed out on all that Italian food because it's very, very nice. But I guess if you can't forgive the Italians for their treatment of your husband, who maybe was a broken man after he came out of there, and they went, they go out for an evening. What do you fancy? Anything but Italian. All right, then. What about Japanese? Mm. Well, they were on the same side, weren't they? But, I like a bit of sushi.
Bratwurst sausage?
Bratwurst. I mean, you are limiting yourself food-wise, but...
He was captured by the Germans in North Africa in 1942, and then Mussolini's Italy took him and took his jewellery off him, gave him hard labour, fed him just celery soup.
It's grim.
It's grim.
I mean, it's absolutely
real tough time.
Yeah.
But
even still, she's missed out. They both missed out on some lovely food, because they've held on to this stuff. And it's a shame in a way.
Yeah, but there's a nice picture of her in the paper.
With a pizza.
With a ham and pineapple pizza next to her. And I think she's happy now. So.
You know what? I'd still find it. Pineapple on pizza. I'm not having it. But you know what? Some people like it. You like it, don't you, Jamie?
Yeah, I don't mind a bit of pineapple on pizza,
All right. I've never had pineapple on pizza. I won't have it.
No,
because you know what? It's the treatment of my parents by the Hawaiians. They're kept in a labour camp in Maui. Oh, my God, it was grim. Surfing. They full surfed them.
Yeah, nice.
I won't have it. I won't hear a word. Grass skirts not allowed in our house.
Anyway, never had a hula hoop either.
Had a hula hoop. Yeah, they are. That's Hawaiian food. Hula hoops, yeah.
Racegoers have been urged to bin their drugs on entry to Aintree.
Right.
So basically what they've got is...
Maybe don't bring them.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Maybe just don't bring them.
Yeah.
They should have is safety deposit box. You put your cocaine in there, right? And you go in and then you can come out and pick it up afterwards.
Yeah,
right?
They should do really. People might be more likely to put it in the box.
Drugs. Don't bring them along.
Well, at the moment, they had them at Cheltenham as well when I went the other day. They've got these big sort of dustbins outside the entrance, and it's called a drug amnesty. And they're like, come on, stick it in there. But then if you don't, then there are sniffer dogs around the entrance.
And you know also that there's plenty of people listening thinking, I might nip down to Cheltenham, right, have a route through the bins outside while everyone's watching the racing.
Well, I looked through the bin, it was empty at
Cheltenham. Was it? Oh,
yeah,
you had a look.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, this thought already occurred to
you. To the amusement of other people standing
very,
in the
very
queue.
Funny.
Thanks very much.
Very funny. But anyway, people are saying, don't bring drugs to race meetings. Yeah, fair enough.
There has been quite a lot of fighting at racing recently.
Huge amounts. Horrible. Horrible. We saw there's been various videos released on social media. It's grim.
But what they were doing at Cheltenham is the dogs were sniffing the people, and if they, you know, if they think they could smell cocaine, then the dog sits down behind the person, and then the person has to go behind a table and get searched. But what they were doing is just patting someone down and not checking their wallet or anything, and then just saying go straight through.
Would it be the dog sits behind?
The dog sits behind. So if the
dog, you understand the concept of a dog sitting behind someone, right? I mean, it's not a difficult thing to visualise.
That's what the dog does in order to be like, okay, there's something a little bit fishy.
So it's got a handler, and the dog sniffs your backside, and then if it sits down behind you, because actually there's a fellow who
then they push them over.
There was a there's a fellow who we were chatting to, and he went, "Oh no, no, they're not cocaine dogs. These are bomb dogs. Check, like sniffing for bombs." Yeah. And he seemed really confident. And then so the fella came past. And
bombs?
Yeah, like you do get some dogs who can sniff for explosives.
No, I know that. I'm just thinking that really people are not bringing bombs to race courses in general.
Well, potentially you could.
I could. They could potentially, but we...
It'd be good. I mean, it'd be a good place to bomb, but you know, you could do a lot of damage.
I see that. I absolutely see that. In the end, though, what most people are doing is trying to bring drugs on a race course.
Yeah, so this fella was telling us how, oh no, they're just sniffing for explosive, not cocaine. By which point the dog came up behind him, and the chap who was running it said, no, actually these are cocaine dogs, and he's actually sat behind you, which means he smells something, so if you'd like to come with me. Yeah,
right.
But as I said, when they actually check you, they didn't really check very thoroughly, and people were still going in. Whereas at the darts, they check every single part of your wallet, all your pockets and stuff, because the problem with darts as well.
Yeah, but also there's I'm assuming there's less people going in because these things take time if you do a proper search. When we go to the Emirates, we do get searched, but it's cursory.
Yeah, it normally
is. To say the least. But there's 60,000 people trying to get in.
I went to West Ham do quite a thorough search, do actually. They? Yeah, I went the other week and it was... Yeah, I've never known it like that. But then it did mean the queues to get anywhere near the stadium.
Ages. If it goes like that, imagine at Spurs, it takes you 3 hours to get in and 3 hours to leave.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a whole day, isn't it? Just to go to an hour and a half football game.
Yeah.
But you know what? Security. And hey, if people are bringing cocaine in, they're starting fights. It's not good either.
No, you're right. Amazon's chief, Jeff Bezos, is still the world's richest man, despite being hit with a £27 billion divorce bill.
Yeah.
£114 million. A quarter of it is £114 million.
Billion.
Yeah,
billion.
It says million here. It's billion, isn't it?
Yes, a quarter of his £114 billion fortune has gone to his ex-wife.
Of 25 years.
Yeah. Well, she was part of the startup. She was one of the first employees and very much involved in the startup of Amazon.
Yeah.
But like I say, I just don't think it's healthy that one person's worth all this money. Mm.
He's still got more money than Bill Gates. Bill Gates is worth $76 billion, and now Jeff Bezos is worth $87
billion. Right. Mm.
He called his wife an extraordinary partner, ally and mother.
Right, so but not extraordinary enough to not go off and have sex with someone else.
No, clearly not.
Clearly not, as it turns out. Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Right. He really does expect a lot from his, a lot in terms of their extraordinariness.
Yeah. Biggest divorce on record, that is, by the way.
Yeah, but it won't be the biggest divorce in 20 years' time. 20 years' time, it'll be someone worth $1 trillion.
Do you reckon?
Well, why not? Probably Jeff Bezos. Or your son of Jeff Bezos. Son of Jeff Bezos. His son. Bezos Jr.
Little Bezos. She's now the richest woman, third richest woman, sorry, behind the L'Oreal and Walmart heiresses.
Right. Yes. Well, hopefully some of that Walmart heiress money will be coming Arsenal's way. Because Stan Kroenke is married to her, isn't he?
Oh, really?
Yes.
Unlikely.
Yes.
More likely go in the American sports, won't it?
Do you know what their whole thing with Walmart, by the way, is to basically just underprice everything until they put all the other local businesses out of business. And then they put the prices up at that point. That's how they've made their money.
So they like they own like Asda and all sorts, don't they?
They own all sorts. Mm. And the thing is, it's the same sort of thing. I mean, Amazon, I'm not saying Amazon have done this, but in the end, it's... what you end up is one company providing everything in a particular area. So Walmart, it's all, everything you want is in Walmart. If you want to get a parcel or something, or get anything, you buy anything now, it's at Amazon. And I'm not sure it's healthy.
Yeah, I think it's something 60+% of all sales is Amazon.
Yeah, obviously
America.
We want 100% of sport radio listeners to listen to Love Sport Radio.
Well, they do already, I think.
Yeah. Well, that's true. That's probably, we're there, aren't we?
Yeah.
We're there. Right, okay, I'm getting a divorce from my missus then. Oh, it doesn't necessarily follow on like that. Okay, fair enough.
This is Love Sport.
Yeah, non-sporting stories. Actually, one here about the world's oldest badger. He's set for a luxury retirement.
Set.
Yeah. I didn't even mean that.
A luxury retirement.
Yeah, he's going to have a luxury retirement. Basically, he is the equivalent of 140 years old.
Oh, what's how many badger years? What is it, like dog years?
Is it 7 to 1, is it?
He's 20.
He's 20. So it's 7. It is 7 to 1.
Yeah.
Badger years and dog years.
Yeah. Well, he's their average lifespan is 5 years.
And he's until 20.
Wow. He's 20, yeah.
Venerable old badger.
Yeah, it's thought that the previous oldest badger on record was 18 and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Sadly, he found his death on the A38.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh dear, well, he shouldn't have been driving at that age, should he? The Prince Philip of the badger world.
I assume this badger is a pet.
Well, yeah, basically.
People keep badgers as pets.
Well, I don't know, because if it wasn't a pet, then how do we know its birth, day, date? We wouldn't, would we?
I don't know.
There might have been badgers that were older, but we're not going to know if they live in the wild.
You can check a badger's age.
How?
Ask it.
How?
Nicely. Just... Not the female badgers, yeah. Obviously. They get really funny about this. Don't ask the badger his age.
he was found by the side of the road. So no, he wasn't born into a loving home. He was found by the side of the road.
So how do we know when it was
adopted badger?
You can check their palms.
You can check
a badger's palm.
It's country law, isn't it? They know this stuff. They're brought up with it. First thing you learn, you got to check a badger's palm. Then you know, cross its palm with silver, and then you can check its age.
We got no idea how old this badger is. This is a nonsense story.
Well, they're not guessing, are they? Oldest badger on record, it's the oldest badger on record. Stop trying to deny it.
Well, it must be a pet then. It can't be a wild badger. We wouldn't know when it was born.
Yeah, you don't have his actual birth certificate, so you don't know the exact day, but they can guess by looking...
Rings. You cut them in rings, half. Rings, yeah. And then obviously they're dead at that point. That's how it died, the 18-year-old.
Apparently he's an adorable badger, although he gets a bit grouchy from time to time.
Well, old badgers do get a bit grouchy, don't they?
He's being looked after in East Sussex, a special wildlife rescue centre.
Oh, nice.
So...
Oh, good old badger.
Good luck to him.
Right. Yeah, good luck.
Good luck to him.
Good luck to Roger.
Is it Roger the badger? Which is a hobby for some people. Get lonely those evenings. But that'll kill it. Anyway.
Travelodge are starting their own a new special wedding, one-stop wedding accommodation service.
Travelodge.
Because basically...
Oh, how classy.
Yeah.
How nice.
Well, wedding guests are starting to find it quite expensive, having to sometimes turn down going to weddings because it is a bit pricey.
Oh, it's ridiculous you got present, how much it costs.
Present for them and the accommodation.
Sometimes you stay for the night as well. It's a lot of money.
Mm. Well, that's the thing, staying for the night. So what Travelodge have done is saying, right, you get your own special dedicated website. The more people who book on with us, the better. Means it's free for the newlyweds if you get more than 10 guests staying in the Travelodge.
Right.
That doesn't help the guests that the newlyweds get it free, but still, there is some sort of discount if they have their own special Travelodge website.
Yeah, okay, that sounds good.
Could be a good idea.
But it's also presents as well on top of that. And it depends what you... I mean, everybody wants a John Lewis wedding list, don't they, or something. But it's an expensive business going to weddings. And I imagine you actually, Jamie, are of the age where you'll get invited to a few at this point.
Just starting to get invited to a lot of stag do's and that sort of stuff now.
This is going to be a thing for a little while.
It will. Yeah. Then you get to my age and then everyone gets divorced. Yeah. Then you get to Ian's
age. I'm doing funerals. Yeah. And they can be really pricey, I'll tell you. Oh, not another one, Dave. I'm not sure we can afford it. It's cheaper to pay for the medical bills. Anyway, got another one, Jamie? Got another one?
The pub at the centre of the Novichok nerve agent attack is reopening, which is good news. In Salisbury, yeah, it's got a new name. The Mill in Salisbury has been...
the Novichok Arms. Should we get down to Novichok for a quick one? That'd be a bit unfortunate, really.
It's called the Mill. It's called the Mill under new ownership.
Right.
And after a year out of business, it's back in there. So
yeah, that was tough on Salisbury. It was tough on the businesses, the local, you know... Nobody's going to eat in the local Prezzo there, or wherever it was called, because that was the one where it started.
Yeah.
And that's really, really tough. But they've said that Salisbury is now clear.
Yes, it's completely clear. So hopefully Salisbury business does a bit better.
Okay. Good. This what is it? 9:44 Comedy Breakfast on Love Sport Radio. Now the Oxford and Cambridge University boat clubs will lock horns in the 165th boat race this Sunday, with the light blues of Cambridge looking to extend the 83-80 lead over their Oxford counterparts. Joining us now is a member of the Cambridge crew, Matthew Holland. Good morning, Matthew.
Good morning.
Now, when it comes to rowing, I mean, how does it feel to be part of the action?
It's a really exciting feeling. Like, I grew up watching the boat race on the television, so to actually have a seat in it and know that I'm going to be sitting there on the start line doing it myself is a really exciting feeling. I'm very honoured to be a part of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I guess something makes it even more exciting. One of your teammates, James Cracknell. What's it been like training with him and sitting in the same boat as an Olympic gold medalist?
A double Olympic gold medalist.
Of course.
I've learned an awful lot off James. And I mean, what he's been really good at is he's brought his experience, but he's not been arrogant at all. He's been humble. He's sat down. He's knuckled down with the guys. And at first, I was nervous. You know, I'm a little 21-year-old cox with limited experience, coxing someone who's been at the highest level of rowing for a very long time. But he settled in. He's given me lots of good feedback. And, you know, we get on well. There have been times where I've had to, you know, tell him off, tell him he's doing the wrong thing. But most of the time, he does a really good job. And he's helped drive the boat along a lot. He's been a really useful presence for it.
And tell us what a cox does, Matthew. Because, I mean, essentially, you're just an annoying bloke in a boat, really. Go and row harder, yeah? Or is there more to it than that?
And there's a little more to it than that. That is the fundamental of it, I would guess, is it's my job to sit at the back of the boat. And the river that we race on is not straight. It's got lots of curves.
You're steering as well, aren't you?
Yes, I steer the boat. So it's got a lot of current, and there's a bit of the river which is faster. The current is faster, and my job is to make sure that the Cambridge boat is in that faster water more than the Oxford boat is.
Yeah.
And on top of that, I've also got to tell them where we are on the course, tell them how we're doing, and basically crack the whip, ask them to row harder and make us go faster.
Right. Absolutely. Can you talk us through the day? What sort of things will go on before the race? What's the preparation like in the day itself?
So the night before the race, we'll all sit down as a crew, have dinner, tell a few bad jokes, you know, just relax ourselves, get to know each other a bit. Then we get up nice and early, come down on the day of the race and do a little pre-paddle, a really short row just to get everyone moving together. And that's really weird because the whole place is quiet and really silent. And it's just like, hang on, isn't there supposed to be a big race here? And then we get back in the minibus, get back to our house, have some breakfast. And then the next time we come back, the river is just full of people. There's helicopter above us, there's crowds everywhere, the television cameras are out, and that's when it really starts to hit home that actually what we're doing is pretty huge. So then we come in, we do some land warm-up, we do a bit of time on the rowing machine just to warm the muscles up. Then the BBC film us boating, we put the boat on the water, we'll do a 45-minute warm-up, and then we come to the bridges and get attached to the start line, ready to go, and then that's when stuff gets really pretty real. So as we come to the bridge, you hit this like roar of noise. There's thousands of people cheering for you.
Yeah.
And you've got the helicopter above you. And then that's when it starts really feeling pretty real.
And who's the favourites this year?
I think at the moment we are. I've not paid too much attention to it, to be honest. I'm not really worried about what other people think. It's about what we can achieve as a crew. It's about what we can perform. I don't really care what other people think. But it's nice to know that we've got, you know, the confidence of the public and that people back us. I like that.
Well, I hope you have an absolutely fantastic time and good luck with the race.
Thank you so much.
See you soon. That's Matthew Holland there. That's the cox of the Cambridge crew. The boat race is this Sunday.
Love Sport.
Thanks for listening to the Ian Stone Comedy Breakfast podcast edition. I'm back every weekday morning, 6:30.